And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. It's beautiful outside. Oh my goodness, if it was going to be this way all day long, I would be outside all day long. But from what I can tell, we've got some weather coming this way. Anyway, glad to be with you this morning. Let me share a few things with you before I start taking some phone calls. And you realize I want to give you very practical, simple, straightforward information that you can use, you can put into practice. There's not going to be a group of people that can't afford to do this, most likely. Of course, maybe I'm making an assumption. As a general rule, nutrients are relatively inexpensive. They don't cost an arm and a leg. There are some drugs, however, that can be pretty pricey. And so if you were given a cure of a medication for your health problem, yeah, there's some drugs that would definitely put you into bankruptcy instantly if you had those drugs. This is not the case. Back in 1984, there was a doctor from Texas. That's the only reason I'm covering this. If he had been from Louisiana or New Mexico, I would just dump the story and move on till I found one from Texas so I could have my confirmation bias. I'm only joking about that. I'm just joking. But what Dr. Ebi found from Texas, very simple and straightforward. If he could get people to take what are called zinc lozenges, he discovered that he could greatly decrease the severity and the duration of the common cold. So you tell me, if you're coming down with a cold, do you want it to be resolved pretty quickly, or do you want to drag this sucker out for a long time and have it for 3 or 4 weeks? Well, we know the answer to that. You don't want a cold to wreck your day in the things that you could be doing productive for like 8 to 14 days, or maybe 21 days. No. So thanks to Dr. Ebi, we found out about taking zinc, either acetate or zinc gluconate. I think when I look at the research on that, the reason that he chose zinc acetate or zinc gluconate for these zinc lozenges is going to come back to be pretty important. Well, the problem is, somewhere between 1984 and the year 2000, many researchers did studies to test to see if what Dr. George Ebi was, you know, could be reproduced in the laboratory. And so it turned out to be very controversial. Half the report said it works, and the other half says it's baloney, it doesn't work. Well, enter the research of Dr. Prasad, a very famous zinc researcher, and I like reading his stuff because I think he's just very common sense and he's got a heart of gold when it comes to helping people. Now, he's from Iran, where he has tried to bless and help his people that have had zinc deficiencies. So Dr. Prasad published two articles, one in the Annals of Internal Medicine, which I would say is a very prestigious journal, and the other one is in the Journal of Infectious Diseases. If you have been watching the news or paying attention to what's going on in the world, then maybe studying the topic of infectious diseases could be a pretty good topic. Well, he went on to say that there were two... So the controversy with the zinc lozenges, he says there was just a little bit of a problem with those studies. In the first place, if the researchers were giving zinc lozenges, then it definitely made a difference what the mineral salts were made of. And so if they used a mineral salt, just any of them, that didn't gel with the human body, then it didn't seem to work. He said that you had to have something where zinc is released properly into the mouth when you take it as a lozenge. Now, the idea of a zinc lozenge is very, very simple. The moment you feel like you're coming down with a cold, or maybe you feel a little bit off, that's the time to place the zinc lozenge in the mouth. That's called striking while the iron is hot. Does that make sense? So he found there were only two forms of mineral salts that he could bind the zinc to in the form of a lozenge that would actually work. It's called zinc gluconate or zinc acetate. And he found these were the ones that definitely worked. So if you're making notes this morning, zinc lozenges are great. But if it's a form other than zinc gluconate or zinc acetate, not going to really do what you want. So what do you do with a zinc lozenge? Well, if you feel like you're coming down with a bug of some kind, you would place it in your mouth and just let it dissolve slowly into nothingness while you hold it in your mouth. I guess if you were super hungry, you might chew it up real fast. That's not seeming to be the effective strategy for this. So first thing they noticed was, if it was going to greatly decrease the severity and the duration of the common cold, it had to be the proper form of zinc. So you want to use the correct mineral salt complex. That would be zinc gluconate or zinc acetate. Got it. Well, what's number two? If you wait to start to take the zinc lozenge when you're like 24 hours into the cold, and you've got maybe 8 to 10 symptoms at that point, everything from a sore throat to a cough to a fever, you feel malaise, you're lethargic, you want to lay down, you've got night sweats, you might have waited just a little bit too long. So, the point that he makes is, choose zinc gluconate, choose zinc acetate for a zinc lozenge. The next thing is, the quicker you start the zinc lozenges, that's going to guarantee you by far and away the greatest effectiveness. Don't wait 24 hours, and certainly don't wait 3 or 4 days. And they show that if you take the zinc lozenges the 3 to 4 days after the cold starts, they're not really that effective at all. It's just about a guarantee that the cold's going to last an additional 8 days, which is no fun. So that's some of the criteria right there. Now, if you can just do very simply, suck on the zinc lozenges, make sure it's zinc gluconate or zinc acetate. If you can take the zinc lozenges at the moment you start to feel like you've got a cold, that's when it's extremely effective. So from that perspective, yes, that's what this published study shows, that you can reduce the duration of a cold by 50% and the severity by 50% if you could just do those two things. The sooner you start to tackle the infection, the better this is going to go. If you wait 4 days into the cold, not going to really make that big of a difference. So the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times, among many others, they did a huge review from the Cochrane Review on the zinc for the common cold, and it was published. And it was going to be, they found out that zinc, in fact, was not controversial. It was very, very effective if these precautions were taken. I think you know what those are now. Well, how does it work? Well, I think you've heard me say before that probably 95% of all viral infections, they tend to incubate in the back of the throat or the nasopharynx. So, thus the sore throat. So, what you're trying to do here is, zinc seems to work by decreasing the adhesion molecules where the viruses attach. Let me think about that for a second. Do I want to make it difficult for viruses to be able to attach to my own cells? Yes. Well, that's what zinc accomplishes. You've heard me say before that zinc is the cornerstone of the immune system. Oh, my word. I'm trying to think of what doesn't zinc do. Well, there's a lot of things it doesn't do. Actually, it might make you smarter. So it makes sense that zinc is going to work if you take it at the early stages of a cold, but not so much after the viruses have already attached these adhesion molecules and caused their damage. Does that make sense? Another thing that I found, I could not find, where's my reference on this? Anyway, you already know this to be common sense, so let me just run this past you right here. If someone's going to be at risk for developing pneumonia, who's that going to be? Is that going to be like a 20-year-old or a 30 or 40-year-old? No, not so much. So which group of people in America, or maybe the world for that matter, who's going to be most prone to either having pneumonia or upper respiratory tract infections? And when I looked at this one study, I'm sorry, I don't have the reference on this. I need to look it up. I'm sure I could find it. And this kind of shocked me right here. If you're elderly, the incidence of upper respiratory tract infections are 5 to 6 a year from this one study. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is not to be negative, but what's a possible solution? They showed that if they could convince older people just to supplement with one thing, that would be zinc, that you could reduce the incidence by 66%. I promise you, if they had a drug on the market, even if it was expensive, that could reduce the incidence of a cold or an upper respiratory tract infection or pneumonia by 66%, it would be a top seller. In this particular study, it says, in referring to pneumonia and infections or upper respiratory tract infections, yes, I know people that have a continual upper respiratory tract infection and it never goes away. Well, maybe you need to consider the element zinc. The article goes on to say that zinc has 3 major effects on the immune system. Number one, it affects what's called cell-mediated immunity. Well, that's pretty important because the ability of a white blood cell to do its job properly and recognize a virus as a foreign entity and crawl over to it and beat it up and eat it for breakfast, that's kind of important. And zinc seems to be a gatekeeper toward that. So you got 2 choices. You can either try to make it in this world with low levels of zinc in your system, or you can start to feed your immune system the very thing it needs to be able to function properly. Okay, good. Number 2. Zinc seems to act as a very interesting antioxidant. Now, to me, I find that very interesting because most of the garbage and debris and toxins and waste, it tends to strain our antioxidant system. It generates free radicals. Well, that harms your body in a number of ways, just like you could imagine, not that I've witness somebody smoking tons of cigarettes. Actually, I have. My dad smoked quite a bit. But cigarette smoke, you know that that's hard on the body. That's huge amounts of what are called free radicals. Well, zinc helps kind of mop that stuff up so it doesn't do the damage. Now, the other thing that I find very, very intriguing about zinc when it comes to the study on upper respiratory tract infections, it acts as a very important anti-inflammatory compound. Well, you know as well as I do, just from studying nutrition and studying health and disease, if you want a disease to come on board and take over the body and ravage it, let's just generate a little bit of inflammation. So if you look at the concept of most modern diseases that we face today, from atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries, if somebody's got like plaque in their arteries, not good. If somebody has a diagnosis of cancer, or they have a chronic deleterious deterioration and degeneration of the brain like Alzheimer's, well, that's because of too much oxidation and too much inflammation. So maybe zinc might end up being kind of important deal to talk about there. Now, I watched a video that Tracy had sent me. It was an interview of Vladimir Zelenko. He's a medical doctor in New York. And when I watched the podcast, Skyping interview, he was saying that he currently had some type of a health issue. That means he was not able to properly examine patients. But I remember him saying he treated 699 consecutive cases of the COVID-19 or the coronavirus with a complete 100% success. And what I thought was interesting, But he was able to prevent all of these people from having to be intubated. I promise you, that is the last thing that you want, is to have a tube down your throat going into your lungs. You don't want that. And what was his treatment protocol? Well, he used zinc. If I'm not mistaken, I heard him say specifically on this podcast that it was 220 milligrams for just daily for 5 days of zinc sulfate. He also used an old school drug to treat that's been used to treat malaria called chloroquinine. And he also used the antibiotic azithromycin. Now, what I think is interesting here, let me walk this backwards just for a second. The whole reason that I started talking about zinc is because zinc has been shown to prevent viruses from attaching and adhering to cells. That could be a very, very important thing for you to consider. Now, I found this study that in the year 2010, university-based researchers in the Netherlands and the United States of America, they reported that a combination of the trace mineral zinc, this is in 2010, so this is not anything new, it says November of 2010, so it's not exactly 10 years old yet, but let's just say we're getting close to that, okay? 9.5. So back in, this comes from the journal, Pathogens Journal, Volume 6, Issue Number 11, November 2010. So that's, if you want to look it up for yourself. But what they found was, and I know there's two points with this, so I want to make sure you understand these. Because we're going to go back to Dr. Zelenko in just a moment. But they said if they use the combination of the trace mineral zinc plus a zinc transport molecule. I know that's kind of a different concept, but basically, think of a zinc transport molecule as something to help actually get zinc into the cells. Well, in the human body, where does zinc belong? It belongs inside the cells, which, put simply, if somebody's either not getting enough zinc, or for a variety of reasons, maybe they're taking an acid-blocking drug for heartburn or for GERD or for reflux or indigestion, well, that would pretty much kill your absorption of zinc. So in this study in 2010, they gave the trace mineral zinc plus a zinc transport molecule. The technical term, they call it an ionophore. And what that does is it facilitates zinc's entry into the cells. And they showed in this study that it efficiently impairs the replication of RNA viruses, like the newly mutated COVID-19 coronavirus, effectively a cure. So isn't this interesting that they found a discovery or a cure for the coronavirus back in 2010? And I think Dr. Vladimir Zelenko had probably read this. Or at least that's what I got from watching the podcast that Tracy had sent me. And so what he did was, he used chloroquinine as a zinc ionophore. That means a transportation molecule to help get zinc inside the cells, and that prevents the replication of the coronavirus. Okay. Where did I read this right here? I think I've already lost, but what I want you to understand is the chloroquinine has been shown to be a zinc ionophore or ionophore. And what that does is it's been shown to help. So maybe that's one of the modes of action that helps your body defeat the coronavirus. Okay. Here's what they did in the laboratory in a petri dish. All they did was they took zinc plus the ionophore, and it was found to totally abolish the RNA coronavirus at very low concentrations in a laboratory dish or a petri dish, meaning treatment leading to a cure is achievable in humans. And so the zinc plus the ionophore approach was successfully tested on the deadly SARS coronavirus that struck the human populations in Asia back in 2003 to 2004. It was also found to be effective against the Coxsackie virus, the foot and mouth disease, and the rhinovirus, which is, you know, the rhinovirus is what probably causes the common cold. In this present, the COVID-19 coronavirus epidemic, I'm just reading what a researcher is saying, that the zinc plus the ionophore combination, that'd be like a chloroquine, could have been employed in a targeted fashion for high-risk groups, meaning those that are very, very old and might be very, very zinc deficient, or their immune system might be quite sluggish or tired. Or if you're a diabetic, there's a classic zinc deficiency right there. Individuals that smoke cigarettes, that's another zinc deficiency. How about people that drink alcohol? Definitely a zinc deficiency. I have read a lot of research about when people drink alcohol, even a little bit, it can very adversely affect how you absorb and process zinc. And so the thing of it is, zinc, you don't think right. You do not have happy thoughts. You tend to be very negative. You probably are a little bit delusional. See, the rational part of the brain requires zinc. And what if you've consumed a lot of alcohol? Well, you may not be the most rational, thought-producing individual on the planet. Just something to think about. I guess what I'm getting to is, maybe you should consider a little bit of zinc in order to help bolster the effectiveness of your immune system. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open. And the phone number is 903-586-5257. Actually, I had some more here somewhere. Here's the people right here. They're going to be most vulnerable to having a zinc deficiency. It says the likelihood that you have a zinc deficiency is very high if you're of advanced age, a diabetic, drink alcohol, or a vegetarian. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good today. Is there another mineral that can, or substance that can open up the cell, other than the one that you're mentioning, because you have to have a prescription, and there, and even in some places like New York, I heard the governor is hoarding that
the chloroquine,
because some of them are, they don't believe in it or otherwise. Is there another mineral or substance that can open up the cell to let the zinc get in?
Well, the reason that I discuss the zinc lozenges is because if it's made of either zinc gluconate or zinc acetate, those are the right mineral salts that allows zinc to go into the body. And the dose they used was 75 milligrams.
Okay.
And so I know that's an oversimplification, but here's two or three of the problems. There is a protein that's found in wheat. They're called phytates. They will totally bind to zinc, and that's going to come from when you eat a lot of wheat. So I would say for a person that wanted to do a preemptive strike, the less sugar they eat and the less wheat they eat, that's going to put you in a much better place. What I really want you to do is I want you to go out to the ocean and start looking for flounder or red snapper or something delicious like that to eat.
To get the zinc?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you eat seafood?
Right.
You're getting zinc. Anytime, probably zinc is going to be in the richest sources when you have either seafood or meat. Which means if somebody's more prone to being a vegan or a vegetarian, they just may not get the zinc that they need. And, of course, if somebody's taking, like, an acid-blocking drug, like, let's just say Nexium or something like that, that always prevents absorption from zinc. And so as people age, sometimes their digestive tracts just don't work as good as what they used to. So that would be the other thing that I would think of. I am such a fan of two different things. One's called apple cider vinegar, and the other one's called lemon juice.
Right.
And these things have been shown to be the right blend of mineral salts to help your body absorb nutrients.
Ah.
So if a person said, you know what, I'm going to go crazy today. I'm going to take a fresh lemon, and I'm going to squeeze it and put the juice in my water and drink it, you'd be in a much better place. I mean, there's nothing I'm telling you that's going to be like an instant miracle cure.
Right.
But at least if you take steps to improve your body, it's going to go well. So if a person says, well, no, that was negative. Let me start over here. If you said, you know what, I have been craving sweets like crazy. I can't seem to stop eating. You know, those are all very classic signs of a zinc deficiency. Now, when it goes real extreme, have you ever heard of a condition called anorexia nervosa, where somebody just basically, for a variety of reasons, they become so, they eat so few calories, or they get rid of the calories, and they just become waif-like thin. You can almost see through them. They're so tiny.
Karen Carpenter.
Exactly, Karen Carpenter. So, and that's Dr. Alexander Schaus. He demonstrated long-term chronic zinc deficiencies just lead to horrible weight loss. I was looking at pictures this morning about dwarfs in Egypt, and they all were very short in stature, but they had huge guts or tummies, like a big, I started to call it a beer belly, but you know what I'm looking for, just a huge, round stomach. And all that
descended.
Was just... Yes, it's just totally descended. It sticks way out, and that's just totally a zinc deficiency. And a lot of times what will happen is if a person is actually low in zinc, they may not be able to see as well in the dark as what they used to, and they might find themselves craving a couple of things. They're looking for those foods that have a lot of flavor. They're almost over the top with flavor. It's called nacho cheese Doritos and tortilla chips with lots of salt. But if a person really craves sugar and they like salt, a lot of it, then that could be a classic zinc deficiency.
What would be the maximum milligrams or dosage that you should take in a day and not overdo the zinc?
Well, I read a study this morning about people that had, can I just say depression and keep it pretty simple that way?
Right.
So individuals that had depression, they did a three-week observational study, and all they did was they gave them 25 milligrams of zinc. And that would be easy to come by if you were to pick it up at a health food store.
Right.
And so there's some forms of zinc that tend to be better than others. There's one called OptiZinc. That's been shown to be good. There's one called zinc methionine. That means it's chelated to a sulfur-bound amino acid. That's a good choice right there.
Uh-huh.
They have one called the zinc chelate. Usually it's chelated with a protein or something to help it to be absorbed. That's a very good choice. Zinc picolinate is another one. And so if you got those forms, I would say somewhere between 20 and 30 milligrams. In this study, almost all of them felt like they had so much more vitality at the end of 3 weeks. And they've shown now that in order for a person to have good mental health.
Right.
When maybe what I started to say earlier, I didn't really flesh it out. There is a part of the brain that controls and regulates what's called rational thinking. That means, you know, you tend to have good thoughts. You tend to think in a rational way as opposed to being irrational and making bad mental choices and decisions. But that's where zinc is very rich in the brain. The other part of the brain that seems to have a lot of need for zinc is a structure called the hippocampus. And I think to myself, the hippocampus, oh my goodness, that's where you have Alzheimer's and memory loss quite often. And I think that was a study I started to look up. I just didn't quite get to it. But you've got to have zinc in order to protect these brain structures so you can think properly. And I meant to delve into that a little bit further this morning. I didn't do it about the depression. But you tell me, how many people have you heard of in your lifetime that have struggled with their own thoughts before, where they eventually went to a doctor and they had an antidepressant? Well, what if what their body's really telling them is they're probably low in zinc, and so they cannot generate the rich neurotransmitters? See, when you have a zinc deficiency in the brain, that's going to generate what's called inflammation. So if a person's used to drinking alcohol quite a bit, you probably are not going to think of that person as making the most rational decisions. I'm not judging anybody. I mean, my father drank a lot of alcohol. I'm not trying to be negative. But I'd rather come up with a solution that's going to help the body work better.
Yes, sir. I just have one other question. My oldest daughter, she's 18. She has had these, like, medium headaches. She said most of her life she just has these headaches come on. Is there a mineral deficiency there?
The first one that I think of is probably going to be the mineral called magnesium.
Okay.
If I had to choose one. But then again, if you and I were to go through the research and probably come up with the greatest mineral deficiencies on the planet, it's probably going to be magnesium number one and zinc number two.
Okay.
And so if somebody has headaches, probably the first one to try is just giving them more and more magnesium. Now, let me give you an example. You do find magnesium is rich in cocoa or cacao or chocolate. So if your daughter says, "Dad, I cannot help myself. I'm craving dark chocolate like there's no tomorrow," that would be more classic with a magnesium deficiency.
All of my girls crave chocolate. I've invested a lot of money over the years in the chocolate confection.
You must be a multi-bazillionaire, is that correct?
No, but the fellow that I'm buying the chocolate from is...
That's where it's going.
He was the president of the Ukraine formerly, Poroshenko. Russian chocolates. They send them all over the world, all over Europe.
I did not know that. I learned something new. Thanks for educating me. Now, one more point, and I think this is a powerful one. There's a type of a mouse called an agouti mouse, or it has a gene called the agouti gene. I don't expect that you know what that means, but in research, that means this mouse is genetically bred to be super fat really quick and have every health problem you can think of, from diabetes to lung problems to advanced heart disease to diabetes, you name it. They're going to have a problem because they just pack on the pounds and they can't stop eating.
Right.
Well, back in 2008, and I just read this the other day, and I find it so fascinating. There's a field of medicine called epigenetics. And what that means is it's not so much the gene that's the problem, but it's what you do with it. So you've heard the term nature over nurture. So
right.
what they did with these mice is when they could have babies, they would give birth. And then what they would do is they would give the baby mice only greens to eat instead of sugary grains to make them plump up and get fat. So when they gave these mice salad, all of a sudden the babies, they completely were never obese again just by making that one change. And so what green says, if you tell me you love the taste of kale and spinach and collard greens and turnips and cabbages and broccoli, you know, all those good things they grow in the Ukraine, then what you're doing is you're giving your body what are called methyl donors. And so you're actually methylating better. When I say methylating, I'm not talking about methamphetamines. I'm talking about a process where your genes play out much better commands. And so they went from the most obese, disease-ridden mice to mice that were skinny and lean and healthy just by giving them greens to eat. Now, I don't know how to explain that really any different than what I've done. So everyone that's listening this morning, what could we do today? Maybe we could eat some greens to be healthier, right?
Right. That's the product in Walmart that they've got piled up high. You know, everything else is sold out, but got plenty of cabbage, plenty of broccoli.
You mean there's no run on broccoli at Walmart?
No. No run on cabbage and cauliflower and all those good things.
Oh, listen, It is so educational just going to look and see what people have in their buggies. I'm sorry. Right. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, in Ukraine, we eat cabbage usually for breakfast, three meals a day, for breakfast, lunch, and supper. They're,
well, how do you eat it? How do you prepare it for breakfast?
Just a salad.
And that's typical for breakfast?
It's on the table.
Well, what else is in the salad?
Apples. A nice organic Ukrainian apple.
Does that mean apple trees grow pretty easily there?
Oh, it's like Michigan or Washington State. It's apple rich country. Yeah, my father-in-law has probably 20 apple trees in his garden.
So if you were to go from Michigan, just go due east, you would eventually get to the Ukraine if you drew a straight line.
If you follow the U.S. Canadian border, you'll run right through where we live.
Oh, that kind of explains the weather pattern then, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So they're not like load like where Cuba is.
We've only got 50 that have, well, you know, it's terrible that one dies, but we've only got 50 that have died in Ukraine of a country of 50 million.
No, I agree with you, and I appreciate you being sensitive. I mean, they're all precious souls in the sight of God, right? Okay.
They are, but we practice the quarantine business every winter over there. It's a typical thing, and they've been doing that since it was the Soviet Union.
When you say quarantine, what do you mean? You mean at the first sign that somebody gets an upper respiratory tract infection?
Yeah, individually, but
what's the common protocol in the Ukraine when they start having an infection that goes around?
The first thing they do is they close the schools.
Okay.
And all the children get to stay home, which I like. I get to spend more time with my children.
Oh, that's a
spirit. And in January, February, and everybody is, well, they wear masks, but now my oldest son, he told me that it's a $650 fine now if you're not wearing a mask outside.
Did you just say $650?
Yes, 17,000 hryvnia, which is like rubles.
Is that like, that's got to be a huge fine, right?
No one can afford that. They don't make $150, $200 a month over there. The regular salary is probably...
Oh, my word. So
$200 a month.
So, relatively speaking, they're saying under no circumstances do you go without a mask.
Right.
Wow.
And wash your hands all the time. And in Ukraine, you can buy lye soap.
Yeah, so, old-fashioned lye soap.
The old-fashioned big brown cake soap.
If I had my choice, this is my personal opinion, I'd rather wash my hands with a lye soap than use that alcohol-based sanitizing gel.
I don't
think any germ can survive lye.
No.
Boy, I remember what the smell of it is. My mom used to make it all the time.
Yeah. And also the distancing and all that. The things that we're just now learning here, you know, I'm 59 years old, and this is the first time in my life, you know, I'm a native Texan, first time in my life that I've seen any of this that's going on now. It's really amazing.
We're living in very interesting times, aren't we?
We are.
Well,
thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you. I hope you have a great day, buddy.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Maybe one of the points I'm trying to get to, as we age, the digestive tract doesn't work as efficiently as it used to, so you may have to actually supplement some nutrients if you're going to give your immune system a chance to stay in great working order. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a question. My niece is 8 years old. And she started developing her breasts about age 6 or 7.
She started developing what?
Because recently, at 8 years old, she's vomiting a lot after she eats her meals. Only thing she don't vomit up is oatmeal. And her mother said maybe she started getting ready to start her period.
But you said she's 8 years old, is that right?
Yes.
And she started developing the secondary female characteristics when she was 6 to 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think because she ate those chicken nuggets.
Oh, boy, that'd be like a boatload of MSG right there.
And
a ton of estrogen.
Yeah, my question is, what can she take now? Some kind of vitamins? I think it's she's deficient in these vitamins or minerals or something.
Well, can I take advantage of what I just brought up? And forgive me for going backwards, but I think this is a good point. In the laboratory, they have a type of a mouse called an agouti mouse, because there's this particular gene they call the agouti gene, and these mice have it. And when they have it, they're going to develop sexual characteristics when they're 6 or 7 or 8 years old, which is not meaning in mouse years. I don't mean human years, because mice don't live that long. And so they notice these mice grow up too fast, and they become very, very obese. Well, what they did was, they said, what would happen if we did not feed them their Purina mouse chow? I really made that up, but I think Purina does make, you know, stuff. But it's based on grains, and so grains are going to be a boatload of starch. But they have phytates that block the absorption of minerals. And so one of the things that they did was, it was very simple, is they just started giving the young mice greens to eat. They just gave them greens. That was it. And all of a sudden, their bodies were normal. They were lean. They were athletic. Their reproductive systems returned to normal just by doing that. And the studies that I was showing this morning, I just didn't get to all of them because it's like a huge topic. But when there's improper sexual development, that would be a classic sign of a zinc deficiency. Now, without enough zinc, you cannot break down the excess estrogen that you would get in the chicken nuggets. Because that's what they do, is they give low levels of antibiotics. I think the antibiotic's name is called Tylosin.
Mm-hmm.
And just about every chicken manufacturer. what I meant to say is, if somebody has a facility where they're growing 2.18 billion or bazillion chickens under her roof, then they're giving them Tylosin in the water and in the feed. And what that does is it causes the hens to grow exactly 225% faster. Well, what happens with a human being if you give a little girl and low dose of antibiotics and estrogens? It makes her grow and develop too quick. Well, one of the ways the body detoxifies is you got to have zinc. And so if this little girl begins to, does she sweat easily?
Yeah, she's lactose intolerant. She can't drink milk products.
Well, I would still say if we could make some simple modifications here, and the modifications would be, if she's going to have chicken nuggets, you need to make your own chicken nuggets from free-range, pastured chickens that are raised without hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And today, there are farmers that see the writing on the wall, and they say, you know what? We may be selling a smaller chicken, but we're doing the world a favor, because these chickens are not loaded up with all these hormones and chemicals. And so if you switch to a hormone, you know, pasture-raised chicken, that's what's going to be the best for the little girl. You've got to have both. I know potassium does play some role, but you've got to have both magnesium and zinc to keep female hormones in balance. And if there's a deficiency of those, that's where estrogen starts to build up, and they cause these too fast development. She should actually be more like 13 years old before she develops, right?
Yeah, a lot of girls are developing early, I noticed.
Well, and one of the most common things is, it's very common to be nauseated and vomit when you have a zinc deficiency.
Okay.
I read an article to myself this morning about how did they control severe vomiting and diarrhea. Well, they just gave zinc. Well, in the case of a child that's really particular and they will only eat something like oatmeal or chicken nuggets or something like that, that is a classic zinc deficiency. So you've got to find some way that we can get zinc into her. But okay, that could be very, very simple. It might take somewhere between... The thing of it is, all you have to do is just try this for about 2 to 3 weeks. I would say 3 weeks, but it's going to take somewhere between 20 and 25 milligrams of zinc for about 3 weeks. Let's see if you see a great improvement.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Morgan. You have a blessed day.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The other thing I would do is, if you could make her your own, you know, version of a natural lemonade, I think that would be a very good call, because I think the composition of a lemon, it helps aid in the absorption of nutrients from the food that you're eating. And plus, maybe we could just make it out of monk fruit or a spoonful of raw honey, where we could kind of trick the little girl into having a lemonade that tastes good. I'm just joking about the tricking part, but there's such a huge alteration in taste perception when you're low in zinc, and that can make a person very, very picky eater. I'm sure you have no idea what I'm talking about, right? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Great.
I was listening to the program, obviously, and I heard you talk about upper respiratory problems. And my wife has bronchiectasis and MAC, and she's been treated for that for over 10 years and doesn't really get any better. So, listening to the zinc, and just curious your thoughts on treating those too.
Well, I'm such a fan of very simple remedies that cost very, very low amounts, and they're easy to do by anybody, but there's several things that I would recommend to her. Number one, and can I just have permission to be kind of blunt with you?
Always.
Okay, thank you very much. What I would do is I would take this as she might have a little bit of gunk in her lungs, and we want to start to clean that out to try to help open up those membranes and those alveoli and the surfactants. So, number one, if I could talk her into doing what's called a steam breathing treatment. It's very simple to do. If you were to go to the store and purchase a tea kettle that's made of stainless steel, usually they come with this flip lid that has a little hole in it that starts to whistle. You've heard those before? They sound kind of like, you know, when it gets hot enough and steam's coming out.
We use it every day.
Oh, cool. Does she actually, do you think, how tall is your wife, by the way?
5'3".
Oh, rats. We're going to have to build a stool for her. Six more inches. No, I was just thinking if the tea kettle was right there on that front burner of the stove and she was standing kind of in front of it, 5'3" might put her too close to the steam. I'm not trying to burn a hole in her face.
Understand.
But if she was on like a little stepping stool that was 12 inches high, what she could do is she could just stand in front of the stove and away from the steam and put a towel over her head. But what she's doing is she's trying to do a technique called box breathing. A box breathing, just think of a box as having four sides, you know, the top and the right side, the bottom and the left side. You've got a box. But right. What the box breathing represents, while you're standing about 18 inches, maybe 20 inches away from the throat of the tea kettle or the steam kettle, you put a towel over your head and you're just telling yourself, okay, I'm going to breathe in through my nose for a four count. And the steam itself, not in one session, but over time, is going to start to remove some of the gunk and debris from her lungs. It's just a simple way to clean them. But if she can breathe... I'm sorry?
You said breathe in for a four count?
Yeah, you want to breathe in for a four count. And what you're doing is you're trying to get steam through the nose, down through the respiratory system, into the lower lobes of your lung. The lower lobes of the lung are where you have all the oxygen-rich blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And if you will breathe in for 4 seconds, then the next step is the next part of the box. Let's just say the breathing in for 4 seconds is the top part of the box. Then you hold what you have for 4 seconds. And then the bottom of the box would be you exhale for 4 seconds. And then you hold that exhalation for 4 seconds. So you breathe in deeply to ensure that you can get the medicinal value of the steam deeply into her lungs. And then she holds that for 4 seconds. And then she releases for 4 seconds and holds that. So basically, one breath in and one breath out is going to be 16 seconds.
Gotcha. How long should she do that, standing 12 to... or 18 to 20 inches.
Well, in my fantasy world, that would be exactly 10 minutes.
Okay.
And sometimes also, I'll just take a spoonful of what's called thyme or thyme, or I will experiment. I mean, when I say experiment, I mean, I would never do these things myself. I don't mind her doing them. I'm joking about that. But if she had a little bit of apple cider vinegar, apple cider vinegar is a very good cleansing agent for the body. And so if she wanted to put, say, a half a cup of apple cider vinegar with maybe a teaspoon of thyme or thyme, that will kind of create a medicinal vapor that's going to be both an antiseptic, maybe I should be careful how I say that, in the herbal kingdom, it would be an antiseptic, but it's going to help dissolve gunk and debris from the lungs. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. All she has to do is try it and say, hey, it's working great, or it's not. The other thing is I use what are called lung protomorphogens for this type of situation. Sometimes they're called PMGs for short, and the term PMG stands for protomorphogen glandular. Now, this is offensive to some people. It is not offensive to me, but I respect what other people say. But this comes from the tissue of a calf lung. So when they take a calf to the processing facility in Mineola or over in Panola County or Houston County, where they have a facility that processes them, they take the lungs and they try to gently either freeze dry or dehydrate them, but they're extracting the nuclear proteins from lung cells. And this is something that can greatly, greatly help trigger a healing response. So I'm only telling you what I would do if it was me. Number one, I would do a breathing treatment every day, and I would use box breathing while you've got a towel over your head. Yes, your wife's face will be covered in glistening steam. She's going to have really clear, clean skin pretty quick here. It's probably already clean and beautiful anyway, but there's something about steam that's really, really good for the skin. But hey, she's not going to care if her face is all steamy and wet, is she?
No.
Didn't think so. Number two, the lungs and the colon are the two organ systems in the body that both are potentially hollow organs or hollow tubes. Now, your lungs, they're probably easily 95 to maybe 97% pure water. So I don't think this has to be like a real strong sales pitch to you and to her, but it is so critical that a person really hydrate themselves very, very well when it comes to a lung issue like bronchiectasis and lung issues that don't go away. But in my mind, if I had to choose what not to eat, I would probably say, because of the nature of the lungs and this stuff being gunky and sticky, I would just stay away from sugar and dairy products like they were the plague. So if I had my wish, I would probably give more vegetable-based diet with maybe a little bit of fruit. The very best fruit for the lungs are going to be things like the gentleman told me from the Ukraine, that he has apples cut up in his coleslaw. Actually, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
It does. My wife loves coleslaw.
But there are very specific polyphenols that are found in the skins of apples that just tend to be very, very good for the lungs.
So apples cut up with the skin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You could actually walk into the store right now and buy a bag of organic apples for $3.99 or $4.99 for a bag? Anyway, it's one of those. But you can get those now, but usually the best fruits are going to be the berries. And so if you look at things like blueberries or raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, cherries, those usually are the most nutrient dense, and they have most of the compounds that you need. There's one fungus. It's called cordyceps. Have you ever heard of that before?
Never.
Sometimes it's called caterpillar fungus. If you were to Google cordyceps right now, it would show a picture of a fungus growing out of the top of a caterpillar's head. I think what happens is there's an introduction of this fungus, and it just explodes the caterpillar's body, which is fine by me. I mean, there's too many caterpillars anyway, right? I'm just joking about that. But cordyceps seems to be really good to improving lung function. And so all these things I'm telling you, these are very precise mechanisms to take what she's got. Now, I know what she's thinking right now. She's thinking, There's no way this is going to work. I've been dealing with this for 10 years. And besides, if there was a remedy, wouldn't my doctor told me already? Wouldn't a lung specialist tell me? Yeah, I hear you. I'm not arguing that point. I'm just telling you this. They are wrong, and I am right.
I like that. So the lung PMG, what does that come in, and where do I get it?
Well, there's a company called Standard Process, and they have several products. One of my favorite products is a product called Emphaplex. That is spelled Emphaplex. But it contains lung protomorphogens.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how many people I've seen over the last 31 years that have come in and they've said, my life is over, Dr. Morgan. I'm not going to be allowed to work anymore because I have COPD and emphysema. I don't even smoke cigarettes, Dr. Morgan. How could this happen? But they did an x-ray and they said, I can't drive a truck anymore. I can't work because I've got, you know, emphysema. I'm going, okay, calm down. I'm going to help you. But that product, as well as making that, and the reason I told the story about the mice that are genetically bred to be super, super fat and have diabetes and heart disease, yes, is because I tried to explain that if you switch the diet and you go from eating chicken nuggets and french fries to eating greens, all that flips everything around. All of a sudden, your genes can play out this better command. So your wife wants to be able to breathe, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Hey, how about the fungus?
It's called, well, how do you order your products? It's called Cordyceps.
Cordyceps.
No, let me try here. Okay, I've got it. I had to kind of phonically write down.
I'm not a wonderful speller.
You say you are a wonderful speller?
I am not.
Oh, listen, that's why I get along with you perfectly. You birds of a feather flock together. I can barely spell my name. It's I have it written down here. You ready for it?
Okay. I am.
C O R D E Y C E P S Cordyceps.
C O R D E Y
or D Y.
Mhm.
It's one of those.
Okay.
Like Cordy and Seps.
C E P S.
C E P S, that's it. Not to be confused with CPS.
Okay. So I can go to the granary.
I would rather Cordyceps come to my house, not CPS come to my house. Anyway.
So when I go to the granary, I can ask them for the Cordyceps or caterpillar fungus, and they'll know it either way.
Tell them I sent you.
Well, I'm in Texarkana, so that's going to be difficult. Well, it's not difficult to tell them that.
No, of course they do. The folks in Texarkana, they know all about me. Actually, I don't know that like it's fact. I'm just joking.
No, I bet they probably do. It's a family-run business.
It is. Yeah, they're all good people.
Mm-hmm. Oregano oil. A friend of mine told me that it's really good for me to take a drop or two, a couple times a day.
Sure. Burn a hole right through your throat.
Well, I've tried to hide it in food because, oh my goodness, that is so strong.
Well, but, I just think it's too strong. You're going to, well, I am not going
to.
What now?
For your knowledge, after you take it, if you have a dill pickle or pickle juice,
mm-hmm,
chop on the dill pickle, take the dill, it clears the mouth up.
Good. Good to know.
Good cleanser.
But I've seen the reason why I kind of responded that way, I've seen a lot of people literally burn a hole through their stomach or in their forehead or in their teeth with too much oregano.
Oh, that's true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It will do it.
I had no idea.
It's very, very potent stuff. You can have a very strong reaction to it, which I'm all for oil of oregano. I just think you have to be careful. Personally, my favorite is if you get like a gel cap that is enterically coated, which means it's released only at the proper pH. And a lot of times I err on the side of giving less than more. I know. That's not popular to give less. Anyway.
So I should dilute this then.
I would.
Yeah.
With fresh pickles. Anyway, thank you very much for your phone call, buddy. I wish your wife
thank
the
you.
Best.